Hi, and welcome to Adventure Dog Podcast, the podcast all about doing amazing things with your doggos. I'm Nathan Barry, she's Rue the Shark, and this is episode 36. Today, I'm driven to find new avenues of adventure. Rue never gets tired of coming along for the ride, and we axle the right questions about overland excursions and pack walks with all the dogs. Now, before we get into this episode, I want to talk a bit about off-roading or overland driving and L&T or Leave No Trace. First and foremost, even though it's referred to as an off-road vehicle, or ORV, it's important to remember that any all-terrain motorized vehicle should remain on designated roads, paths, or areas in order to protect and conserve our lands and natural resources. So whenever you hear me say off-road, imagine I'm doing the Dr. Evil air quotes. There are an amazing number of four-wheel drive roads or overland routes, as well as ORV parks throughout North America, as well as the entire world. Just a quick internet search led me to several lists by state of ORV parks and a directory of 4x4 clubs, which will usually be the best resource for finding legal places to drive off-road. Like California alone had more than 70 clubs. Always carry first aid, proper safety equipment, additional parts, and necessary tools. Don't forget to check for any permits that may be required. A good rule of thumb is to tread lightly even when driving an ORV. From the treadlightly.org website. Travel responsibly, respect the rights of others, educate yourself, avoid sensitive areas, and do your part. In most cases, any off-road vehicles should be street legal and follow all the same rules as a normal highway vehicle. In addition, ORVs should pay special attention to rules and regulations on state and federal public lands, because if you don't, there are some stiff penalties under federal law, which includes prison time and massive fines. Simply driving off designated roads in a national park can cost you $5,000 and 6 months of jail time, and that's the low end. So I will include several links for information in the show notes, especially about treading lightly, and info from the National Park Service. Last but not least, do not forget the dogs. They will love every single second of back road, all-terrain, off-road driving, and the places that you can take them to. In today's episode, I talk with Kat and Johnny, who made it their business to explore off-road with their awesome pack of dogs, Charlie, Goomba, Lilo, and Stitch, at the Canine Explorers in Southern California.
I'm not afraid to say I've had a few bad days with that, but I mean, most of it's good days.
Oh, sure. And, you know, that's something, too, if you're okay with mentioning that, you know, I don't know if that, you know, if that's something how you talk to your customers about it. Do you tell them?
Yeah, with working with dogs, like, I'm not afraid to say where I've made mistakes and, like, to let a client know like what their dog's behavior is, because sometimes dogs behave very differently outside their home.
Yeah.
So yeah, whatever comes up, like I'm not afraid to talk about it.
Okay.
With dog care and stuff, like it's a learning experience along with like taking care of them. So if they can be better with what I've learned and like there's different techniques to go about certain things too. Like I always talk about with the clients, like which will work with their dogs and stuff. So if there's something wrong, then we find a way to get it fixed.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I guess one other, before we actually get started, because a lot of what we're talking about right now, I kind of want to cover, but I guess I'm kind of looking for the right questions to ask too. How many dogs are, when you do like weekend excursions, how many dogs do you take with you other than your own?
So our own is 4. So we always have at least 4 with us.
Okay.
Yeah. And then with other people's dogs, it just depends on who would be coming, because certain dogs need a little bit more attention than others.
Okay.
We try to limit to like maybe 6 to 8 max, but the most we've had was actually 11 dogs out in the desert.
Wow. Wow. That's just, okay. That's unbelievable. That's awesome. And that's exactly, I want to hear about this. It's like, that just sounds like heaven to me. If you're ready to get started.
Yeah, if you got the questions, I'll answer.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I've got a lot of questions when it comes to having 11 dogs out in the desert. Yeah, if y'all want to introduce yourselves and, of course, your dogs.
Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Johnny.
And we are the Canine Explorers, and our dogs are Charlie, Goomba, Lilo, and Stitch.
And y'all, of course, are on Instagram at the Canine Explorers.
Correct. All spelled out.
Okay. And then, of course, you've got a couple other, because all of this has become kind of your business. You've got a couple other, so at Canine Overland, and then you also kind of do some photo stuff too, kind of just a whole bunch of things, but then you also have a website, thecanineexplorers.com.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I guess first tell me a little bit about all four of your pups.
Sure. So Charlie is our Yorkie. He is 12 years old, so I actually got him as a gift when I was around 18 by my mom.
Okay.
She bought it for me because my childhood dog passed away and I was just super heartbroken. And I've had that dog for 10 years. So it was really hard for me to continue life basically without a dog. So I just begged my mom for another dog and she bought me Charlie from a breeder. And so we've had him ever since then. And then I met Johnny a few months after that. So Charlie actually came. Charlie actually came before Johnny, so he's my first baby. So everything Charlie needs, it comes before Johnny's. Yeah, and then with Johnny, I've been with him almost 12 years, and we actually rescued Goomba, our Chihuahua mix, through a friend that had backyard puppies. So they were just kind of like giving them out to whoever wanted a puppy for free.
Okay.
So instead of them going to like the shelter or something, like I thought maybe we could get another puppy just so that Charlie could have like a playmate and then Johnny can have a dog of his own.
Yeah.
So she's 8 years old now. So we've had her for 8 years. And then Lilo and Stitch were by accident. So 3 years ago. Yeah, by accident. We weren't planning on it at all. 3 years ago, my mom found a cardboard box right outside her temple one night. And inside it was 3 puppies. Oh. And my mom called me me like what to do, because she didn't know exactly what the protocol was. Mm-hmm. And since me working in with dog stuff, she thought that I would know. So I told her, I was like, either you can bring them home, because it was like nighttime, like it was way past like the time to call anybody.
Okay.
So I told her, bring them home so the next morning we can call like animal control or the humane society to see what to do. So when she brought them home, I saw them and I fell in love right away, obviously, because they're a cute little puppies. So I fed them and like I washed them up a little bit. The next morning we called and the Humane Society basically said we can either keep them or take them to a rescue, because the Humane Society wouldn't really do anything because now that they're in our hands.
Yeah.
So I ended up posting them on Facebook, asking friends and whatever to share around. My friend actually took one of the puppies like right away because they were looking for a new dog.
Okay.
So my friend has one of the puppies and then we had 2 left. So I was looking at the 2 that we had left, and one of them, which is Lilo now, at her puppy stage, like, she couldn't really hold her head up very high. She was, like, leaning to the side, kind of.
Okay.
And when she'd walk, she would walk with, like, a little lean. So we took the puppies to the vet to get them checked out. And then the vet said that Lilo kind of has, like, a neurological disorder. He obviously doesn't know where it came from.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so he suggested we hire a specialist, go to a, like, a neurologist, a neuro doctor.
Okay.
Get testing, but then he also even said that maybe Lilo could just grow out of it. So we took our chances and ended up just adopting both Lilo and Stitch together.
Okay.
Just so that Lilo have a bigger dog to grow up with, just in case. But she did end up growing out of it. She still kind of has a little bit of a neuro disorder that's not obvious, but if you kind of watch her, and she'll, like, kind of turn her head, like, very dramatically when you call her name.
Okay.
And stuff, and then just, like, pace around the house a little bit. But other than that, she's completely normal. She goes on hikes and she goes camping. She jumps in and out of the car, and everything's completely normal and fine.
Yeah.
So we got lucky.
Okay, and so I actually have to ask, because I'm not sure, Lilo has the spots on her nose, correct?
Correct. She has the freckles.
Okay. I wish I... So I had to double check and wanted to make sure, because I don't want to mess that up. Yeah, I mean, they are gorgeous. And then, of course, I see that they do get to hang out with their sister as well on occasion.
Yeah, so it's a good thing that one of our friends ended up adopting the other litter. She lives down the street from us.
Nice.
Yeah, so we occasionally, like, even watch her dog and then their other dog, which is a corgi. They come over and spend the night and stuff while they have to travel.
Well, I'm going to get kind of right into this, because with your business, which is not just dog walking, but adventure dog walking, I mean, how did you get started with this? Were you already getting out and adventuring with Charlie and Goomba, or, you know, was there a process of getting more involved in this once you got Lilo and Stitch?
Definitely Lilo and Stitch encouraged more outings.
Okay.
Before Charlie and Goomba, because they're little, we didn't really think that they could, like, climb mountains and stuff.
Yeah.
And then between me and Johnny, even before, like, all the dogs, except for Charlie, we hiked on our own. We liked hiking and we go outdoors, but we didn't really do much camping.
Okay.
But I've always loved the idea of camping. Yeah. And then when I started dog walking, I didn't think it would be anything more than just dog walking, because I started going to client homes and just walking their dogs privately without my dogs.
Okay.
So I did that for about 4 years up until last year. And last year, that's when I thought maybe, like, my dogs can join in.
Yeah.
So I was like, if I'm other people's dogs, why don't I walk my own dogs? And then some days I get so many dogs that I'm just tired by the end of it. So when I get home, I don't have time to really walk my dogs. And I felt very guilty of that.
Okay.
So just basically with the clients that I did have, I asked them if it was okay that I brought my dogs along.
Okay.
And it kind of grew from there into a pack that I started adding more and more together. Instead of just bringing my dogs to each and every house, mm-hmm. I ended up just bringing my dogs and picked up everyone at the same time, and then did a big group walk.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you first started getting into this, was your experience of having two dogs, I guess that kind of helped you, but how did this build up? Did you have to go through any kind of learning process of taking out 3, 4, 5 and more dogs?
Yeah, definitely a long learning process.
Okay.
So when I did ask clients if it was okay to bring my dogs, only a few of them were okay with it. And then some of them were just kind of like on the fence.
Okay.
So with the clients that did allow me to, it helped me practice, like, what's the easiest way to hold on to, like, multiple leashes.
Yeah.
And through that, like, I learned that just kind of owning up to my position as, like, a leader
Okay.
When I walked the dogs, I wouldn't let like all the dogs kind of like pull me when they walk. They would either walk beside me or behind me. I would lead the walk, not them. So it was really hard to walk multiple dogs when not all the dogs know how to walk. So when we do add new dogs to the pack, we always do it one by one.
Okay.
On like separate days, just so that they can kind of learn from the pack that already knows how to walk to walk.
So I guess in a sense, you're also kind of training new dogs that come into the walks.
Yeah, I wouldn't say training per se.
Okay.
It's more like guidance.
Okay.
Because I can't, like, if it was a dog that just doesn't know how to walk on a leash at all, like, they're just not going to learn it
sure.
right away without individual attention. But the power of the pack is a huge deal when it comes to like just the group walks. If I have at least one good dog, that dog will set the example and like kind of like the energy.
Okay.
And then most of the time the dogs will just kind of like fall in place and like just follow that leader.
So
behind me, of course.
So it helps that when you're taking on a new client or you're bringing a dog into the group, that dog already has to have some prior leash training.
Yeah, it definitely helps a lot. If it's like a dog that just doesn't know how to walk at all, always pulling, that's when I kind of try quick methods, like just like prong collars or
okay.
leashes or head collars, harnesses or whatnot. Those are like the quick fix without having to do the homework.
Okay.
If that doesn't work, then I would suggest like the clients to find a trainer or them to train on their own time to get the dog to at least know what a leash means.
Yeah.
Which is walk kind of nicely, and then they can come back into the pack walk.
What's the biggest group that you've taken out on maybe not an excursion, but just kind of in the neighborhood or, you know, during the week? What's the most number of dogs that you've done at once?
So me and Johnny walk together most of the time.
Okay.
So we between the two of us.
Okay.
So we usually actually have like between 6 to 8 dogs each.
Oh, wow.
But one time he went to Asia with his family for 2 weeks, leaving me alone. So I had to do all the dog walks by myself. And the most I've had, I think, 12 or 13 by myself.
Wow.
Yeah, and those days I actually had a walking bell. There's no way I'm going to hold 13 leashes in one hand.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So I guess you kind of have like not just techniques, but anything that you use that's useful for walking that many dogs.
Yeah, so we actually found like a rock climbing belt on Amazon that has two circular metal things.
I don't
know what they're called. D-rings on the side, like where the belt sits on the hip.
Oh yeah.
And then we just really strong carabiners, and we literally just carabiner each and every leash and just hook it onto the belt so that the power is like more center of the body. So just in case
yeah.
the dog does pulling, then it doesn't like yank our arms rather than just kind of like our whole body.
Okay.
But recently I've actually graduated from that, and I hold the leashes in one hand.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm looking at not just photos on your Instagram, but then also, of course, on your webpage. And there's on the main page the one photo, and I'm just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's just like it's an amazing photo, just tails everywhere. So that's really, really super cool.
Thank you.
Do you do walk one-on-one ever? You know, can someone, just out of curiosity, can someone like reserve you for just like a one-on-one, just one dog hike? I mean, you were talking about how sometimes you'll ask your clients if they're okay with your dogs being there. What happens when someone says no? I mean, can they request just their dog?
Yes, but no.
Okay.
So in the beginning I did do like one dog where like I would take a single dog out. But now because we have such a large clientele mm-hmm. and then every day we have a large group, our schedule doesn't really fit like the private walks.
Okay.
But if it came to the point where someone like kind of insisted that I did, then yeah. I would make time for it. But at the same time, like my dogs kind of need to come along.
Okay.
They come first, you know?
Yeah. They take priority.
Yeah. The whole reason is so that all the dogs can get a chance to get out. And then the whole pack mentality too is really healthy for them, because dogs instinctually like have like that social connection.
Okay.
Which is why we also host like community pack walks and pack hikes, where people just come out and meet with their dog alone without having to sign them up for a pack walk and not be there. If that makes sense. Yeah. So they can work on their dog by themselves when there's like a group of people. So our community pack walks is basically that, where people who have like reactive dogs or like dogs that just need a little bit more training, they come out to our pack walks and everyone keeps their distance, but at the same time they're still kind of in the same group.
Yeah, still being social to some degree.
And they're still getting socialized without having to touch.
Okay.
And then dogs get a lot better.
Yeah, I've noticed that a bunch of times. I've actually gotten to meet up with some of the people, some of my friends I've met on Instagram, and, you know, knowing that they have reactive dogs and just kind of practicing like parallel walking and stuff like that. It's been really great being able to get reactive dogs together, and within minutes, you know, they're usually able to socialize and get along really well. So yeah, it's fun. It's a whole lot of fun when you can get multiple dogs together that may have previously had issues or have issues, and then kind of work through that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I always get a kick out of people who return to our pack walks because they know it's working.
Yeah.
And it helps me too, because I know it's working, and then we end up becoming friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've made a lot of friends through my business, and I don't really see it as work anymore. It's just part of my life.
Yeah. Well, kind of on that note, you know, getting together, doing pack walks and stuff, you've been a leader for at Hiking Dogs of Insta.
Uh-huh.
How has that been? How did you become a leader for that? What's your take on the Hiking Dogs of Insta and being a leader?
Yeah, so I was following Hiking Dogs of Insta for a while.
Okay.
Even before everything, I always admired people just getting out there with their dogs. And through that Instagram, like it kind of helped me just search for like different areas and dog friendly places and hikes to go to. Cause sometimes you can just Google something and not a lot of stuff show up, or too many stuff show up, and it's hard to choose.
Yeah.
So based off photos of other people and other Instagrams, like that could strike my interest to maybe try out that hike.
Okay.
If I wanted. Yeah. And then Hiking Dogs of Insta posted before this summer asking for leaders and for people to apply. So I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So I applied because I feel like that's something I already do, which is I go out with my dogs. I'm like, kind of like a no-brainer. If I didn't get the leader, then, you know, that's okay too. But I ended up becoming one of, I think, three leaders in SoCal here with someone else that's now a friend. So we both lead hikes, and then we kind of alternate months, so we don't do it in the same month.
And yeah, I guess, I don't know if we mentioned it or not, you are in Newport Beach, which is just right outside of Los Angeles.
Yeah, so we're a little bit south of Los Angeles, about 45-minute drive.
Okay.
We're right next to Huntington Beach.
Okay.
Yeah. Huntington Beach is basically the city that everyone knows because it's the surf city. So we're right below Huntington Beach.
And that reminds me, I think that kind of playing Instagram connect the dots, I've met you through Crystal at Dog for Dog.
I think she's in Huntington Beach.
Yeah, she's in Huntington Beach. So I think she kind of put me in touch with y'all. So speaking of a little bit of a community connection there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there in Southern California, what are some of your favorite places? And I know that you guys get out and do some really big adventures, especially with having the four-wheel drive and getting out into the desert and to some other really cool places. But let's start local first. You know, what are some of your favorite places just kind of near home to go to?
Okay, yeah. So Newport Beach actually has a nature preserve called the Back Bay.
Okay.
And that is a 13-mile loop around the bay that enters into the ocean. So there's a lot of, like, nature walks, bike trails, horse trails. We like to go there for our daily pack walks only because there's, like, a lot of scents and a lot of distractions for the dogs and good practice.
Okay.
And then the pretty views. And then just a little bit out, maybe, like, Silverado Canyon would be a good one. I want to say maybe a half hour to 45-minute side street drive. And there's one or two off-road trails out there that we like to drive out. And then, and Huntington Beach Dog Beach is a good one too.
Okay.
To let the dogs run around at the beach. Those would be local areas that we can get out within the day or like kind of a spontaneous trip.
Okay.
Anything farther takes a little bit of planning, but our favorite place to go to is Thomas Mountain, which is right outside of Anza, California, kind of nestled between like Temecula, I think. I know we have to drive through Temecula to get there.
Okay.
But yeah, that's an off-road driving trail too. And along that trail that we take, there's Yellow Post campsites, which is like free camping. It's like primitive camping. There's not a lot of amenities, but there's one campground, and then you basically just drive up, park, and then you just can camp.
Okay.
Out there. Dog friendly, yeah. So, and because it's not easy to get to, it's mostly quiet because there's only a few people that there. Yeah, and it lets us let the dog run around.
Okay, so that's like right in the San Bernardino National Forest area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you guys have the luxury of having four-wheel drive and being able to get a little bit off-road and kind of away from the crowds. So yeah, that's got to be nice, being able to just kind of get out and get into some of the more primitive areas. And I guess you do this with your weekend excursions. Would these be some of the places that you take other dogs?
Yeah, so when we plan a camping trip, sometimes we plan last minute and sometimes we plan like ahead of time.
Okay.
Based off that, like the clients that we do have occasionally have us board their dogs, kind of like a doggy hotel.
Okay.
And what we do is we'll watch them overnight and stuff. And if we do have a camping trip planned, we obviously tell the clients, hey, we're going camping. Is it okay if your dog can come? And then all of our clients right now actually are okay with that.
Cool.
So, yeah, so whenever there's a time where they need their dogs watched and we have a camping trip, we kind of just say, hey, we're going camping, and then we're taking them.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so they're actually really flexible. The people that I work with now, we've built a relationship where they kind of trust what we're doing, and then we take care of their dogs, go out and do stuff that they normally don't.
Right.
There's one family that just recently had a baby, so they don't really go out much, but they enjoy seeing that their dog gets to go out.
Yeah.
Go camping, hang out with their friends. Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know like what questions to ask about this because this is something so unique to
it's
me.
Super brand new. I don't know how I came up with the idea, but I have always loved camping and then dogs. And dogs and camping. So I just thought, why not put that together?
It's brilliant.
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah,
that's great.
And with Johnny, he's the car side. So he does all things cars. Like the Jeep is all him.
Okay.
I just ride the passenger seat.
Okay. Well, now I guess is probably a good time to get into the whole Jeep story. I'm really curious about, you know, kind of how you got started with doing overland and how you got started taking dogs out on your camping trip. So how did this build up?
So our first Jeep was also by accident.
Okay.
yeah, it's an interesting story because we never really planned it. When we got our first Jeep, it was from a client that her son was actually going away for college and didn't need his vehicle anymore.
Okay.
He was driving a 2005 Jeep Grand Cherokee. And so every time we came over to pick up their dogs for walks and stuff, we've always seen it on the driveway, and we always thought, cool, like, what if one day we had our own Jeep, you know, because Jeeps are known for, like, outdoor adventures.
Yeah.
And then when we heard that they were selling it, so they asked me if I knew anyone that needed a car. I was like, honestly, like, what about us? Like, we can like, find some money somewhere and buy this Jeep off of them. And we actually really got a really good deal off of it. So, yeah, that's how we got our first Jeep. And then from there, Johnny kind of knew about overlanding more than I did. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Okay.
Johnny ended up doing more research and building that Jeep out.
Okay. And that was the Jeep that you most recently had?
That Jeep was the first Jeep that got into the accident. So we had that Jeep. We did all the upgrades. We put our company wrap on it. So all our money went into that. And we did that last October. And up until this past September on Labor Day, that's when we got hit. Got into a car accident. That's what happened. And then that car was totaled.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank you.
Especially when something like that, kind of what we were talking about earlier, that's so important to a lifeline to your business and to everything that you do, but even more so when your business is something like you really enjoy and getting out, and it's not just work, it's actually your lifestyle gets hit.
Yeah.
What happened after that? How quickly are you able to bounce back? What are your plans? And this just recently happened. This happened 2 months ago, less than 3 months ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, when we got into that accident, we actually had a huge camping trip planned that weekend.
Yeah.
That we ended up having to cancel, of course. But we had a lot of things planned because we were supposed to be involved in, like, this huge group of over 100 rigs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we were supposed to meet a bunch of people and a lot of vendors and all that. But one, we were disappointed, but two, we were actually really thankful that the accident wasn't worse than it was.
Okay.
Because the person that hit us, his car was completely smashed in, but he was able to walk out of his vehicle without having to go to the emergency. And then we also had dogs in our Jeep as well, and none of them were injured. I wasn't injured, so we were actually really thankful for that.
Yeah.
And then just dealing with insurance was just more of like kind of like a
huge headache.
Yeah. But as with anything, you know, but with that, we ended up just getting the money from the insurance and then searching for another vehicle.
Okay.
And then the Jeep we have now is what we bought with that money. But that Jeep was kind of it didn't come right away. Like, we had to do a little bit of research and wait for the right timing, the right person to buy from, mm-hmm. and the right pricing. So Johnny did all that.
Okay. So tell me a little bit, because I have a Subaru. I've got all-wheel drive, but it's nothing like having real, true four-wheel drive and being able to do overland stuff. What are some of the things that either that you've put into the vehicle or done, or that you would recommend for others that are interested in doing this kind of stuff with their dogs?
For me, I think the best thing that people would need on their vehicle to go overland would be tires first, because tires play a major role in traction. Without that, you won't be able to go in sand or mud or snow or whatnot. But if you do have the money, I would consider getting lockers for either your front or rear differential, because that actually helps lock up both wheels for more traction as opposed to open differential. And I think your Subaru has a CVT transmission, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's almost the same thing.
Okay. And then, of course, you've also got quite a rig on top. So, I mean, you're carrying a little bit of extra gear. What's some of the stuff that...
The stuff on the roof rack, we have MaxTrax, which are traction boards.
Okay.
And that's to help us get a sticky situation. Like, let's say, for example, we're stuck in mud or sand. You can dig those underneath your tires, and your tires can roll right over for more traction.
Okay.
And for the rear, we have a high lift jack. So that's in case if we do get a flat tire or we're high center on a rock or something, we can lift one of our sides up and put rocks underneath our tires to roll over it. And that's about it that we have on top of there, other than water and extra fuel up there.
Yeah. And even in my Subaru, and I've done kind of a few, I wouldn't say overland, but definitely I've done some four-wheel drive roads. I love going out to Utah. That's always been my big thing. Our first big trip, actually, with Rue and myself, we went out to Utah and did some stuff, and I learned really quick. Yeah, being prepared, having extra fuel, extra water, and just kind of having everything ready to go. Just out of curiosity, what are some of the worst situations you've had to deal with overland?
Before I even got into overlanding, I think our worst situation was taking a rental car out in the mountains because Google told me that I could take this road to get to a hike that we were supposed to go to, but it took us to some off-road fire.
It wasn't even a fire road.
Yeah,
no.
It hasn't even been maintained or driven like in over a year. There's so much overgrown.
Wow.
And yeah, we totally messed that car up big time going through there, but that wouldn't get stuck. But I think in our Jeep, I think the worst situation was when we went on a trail run in our two-wheel drive Jeep and we got stuck up on the hill because of traction. Yeah, and we had to get pulled up like twice.
Wow. How did the dogs like that?
The dogs
honestly don't mind. Like, yeah. I feel like the car to them is just like their safe haven.
Yeah.
They are so excited to jump in there, and when we're actually like on bumpy roads, I don't like it, but the dogs are sleeping.
Yeah.
Or they're up, their tongues out, and they stick their heads out the window, and they love it.
Yeah. You know, of course I don't do this when I'm highway driving or if I'm in town driving, but when we are four-wheel drive and we're out on back roads like that, Rue loves to stand up on the center console, like surfing almost, and we'll be going, you know, rocking back and forth, and she just loves it. Even better if we've got the sunroof open and she can stick her head out the window. Yeah, that's like her favorite spot when we're doing rough road driving. She loves that.
Yeah, that's sort of like Guma. Guma does the same thing too. She just climbs all over the place.
Well, with having a new Jeep and getting things sorted out, any big adventures that y'all have planned coming up?
Yeah, for our new Jeep, I think I already transferred everything to our new Jeep. So I think our new plans for this new Jeep would be to get more armor. So that would be like the steel front bumper, steel rear bumper, sliders. Yeah, the rig right now that we have already has front and rear lockers, so we don't need that. I think that should be about it, and we're almost done with the rig.
Okay.
Maybe a small wrap.
Yeah, the wrap on the old one is really, really cool. So I would hope that y'all would continue that, and just for not just advertising, but it just looks cool. Just having a
it stands up.
Yeah, having a Jeep driving down the road, you know, with canine on the side of it. It's a canine explorers. That's super cool. That's really awesome to see that.
Yeah.
So yeah, any big adventures that y'all have planned coming up?
We actually do. We have a Traillander, which is one of my subgroups that I started with my friend. We actually gonna be hosting an event this weekend.
Okay.
We're gonna go up in Big Bear Friday to go snowmobiling and then camp over the night. And Saturday, we have another wheeling adventure in the morning with the group. And we're actually going to go to Johnson Valley in the desert. And
okay.
Do some wheeling over there.
When you say snow wheeling, what exactly entails, what's involved with snow wheeling?
Pretty much just snow. Snow on the trail.
Okay.
It makes everything a little bit harder.
Yeah.
It's more fun.
I mean, do you have to have anything special for that?
Just good tires.
Okay.
You can bring if you want. I think chains will help a lot also, but just mainly good tires. Any mud terrain tires would do. Because right now we have all terrains, and it handled pretty well last year, so we're going to keep the same.
Okay. Any other big trips planned further out?
Yeah, she planned that, but we do have another trip in May to the Mojave Desert, which is a 144-mile trail that leads through the Mojave. And you can see a bunch of landmarks like mines and stuff like that. But we are planning a trip to Oregon and Seattle, but we don't know when that will be.
Okay.
We're probably going to plan one for next year.
Okay. Oh, well, I guess one of the things I didn't really ask about was what was the most recent adventure that you guys went on?
So last weekend, we went to Front Runner Outfitters customer appreciation event.
Okay.
Where they had like a toy drive and people come out. And if you donated a toy, you get raffle tickets. But you can also purchase raffle tickets. And a lot of their prizes were like parts that they sell, like roof rack. They also were giving away like a refrigerator, rooftop tents.
Oh, nice.
Different gear.
Okay. And I guess all the dogs went with?
Yeah. So at that time we had our four dogs, and then we were babysitting the Tibetan Mastiff that we still have now. He weighs like 150 pounds. So when we had him there, we like to walk the dogs around the event because it's always dog friendly.
Yeah.
And they held it out over in Hungary Valley in like a designated off-road vehicle recreation area.
Okay.
So literally everything inside of that park was made for off-roading.
Oh, wow.
So they had like campgrounds. They had different areas for different like levels of off-roading, where like beginners can go like on this trail, and then there's other difficult trails with like higher clearance cars can go, and like rock climbing and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so we met up with some of our friends there. We ended up meeting actually a follower of ours because she recognized the dog. She came up to us and asked, are you guys a friend of ours? Yeah, because she recognized the dog that we had, but we didn't have our Jeep with the wrap, so she wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Introduced herself, and then we met her, and then she had her Shiba Inus. And so our dogs got to meet, and then we were walking the dogs around the event. Everyone wanted to meet all our dogs, and then the dog that we were babysitting, the Tibetan Mastiff, his name is Buttercup. And so everyone was like, yeah. So everyone was like, oh my gosh, his name is Buttercup. That's so awesome. Yeah, in person, he's really cute and fluffy and super big. But in those in photos, it doesn't do justice. Like, he looks not that big in photos, but in person, he's massive.
Okay. Is he the one that we're hearing in the background quite a bit?
No, that's our boy, Sitch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's a little upset that we left him outside.
You can always let him in. I'm all about having dogs in the background on the podcast.
Yeah, he likes to mess with the little dogs.
Okay.
He's very playful, so we left him out there. But Buttercup is in the room with us, and then Goomba and Charlie, the little dogs, are in the room with us.
Okay.
They're the quieter one.
So I do have, I'm looking at a few photos kind of going through your Instagram, and a couple of the places I really wanted to ask about and just kind of find out, because you've got tons of photos. You're looking at, gosh, almost 900 photos in here of just all these really, really awesome places, an amazing amount of waterfalls, getting out on the water. What is this place that looks like a castle on the beach?
Oh, that is actually a local favorite. I grew up in Laguna Hills.
Okay.
So that's like a little bit inland from the beach. And that beach is located in Laguna Beach.
Okay. So that's around the corner from you.
Yeah. So growing up, that beach was very secluded. Only like the people in the know knew about it. But of course, with like the birth of Instagram and everyone being a photographer these days, and people just like to share in their blogs like the coolest places.
Yeah.
The popularity grew over the years. So now, like every weekend, they would always be filled with photographers.
Okay.
Doing like family shoots, engagement shoots, all that. And then all of Laguna Beaches are dog friendly as long as they're on leash and like during a certain hour.
Okay. Yeah. I was kind of reading through a couple of your posts, and you're talking about, you know, getting up at 4 a.m. and driving and getting to the trailhead before sunrise, and then trying to be on the trail when it's less crowded. And I guess that's a tough thing to do, especially in that area where it's just massive amounts of people. And of course, the more that people talk about places, the more crowded things get. what are some of the things that you do to kind of avoid the crowds?
Yeah, so usually I don't like waking up early, but if it's for an adventure and I know it's going to be fun, I'm so excited the night before that I barely get any sleep anyway.
Okay.
So waking up at 3, 4 a.m. in the morning for a trip is, like, not a big deal. But if it's for, like, school or work, I would never do that. Yeah, so, and then when we do, like, our big community pack hikes and stuff, knowing that our group is huge.
Yeah.
We always do try and do it before the crowds, only just because it's a little bit safer for okay. everyone and having that many dogs. And then it's just more fun, too, and less crowded means less stress,
yeah.
basically. And then I was going to say a little bit more time with the views.
Yeah. And then, of course, I guess, you know, one of the easy fixes for that is, of course, having a four-wheel drive vehicle where you can get into the secluded spots.
Yeah, one of our recent waterfall hikes that we did yesterday, actually,
okay.
is one of the more popular hikes out in L.A. So we got up pretty early. We were about an hour drive out, but some people came even from San Diego, which is 2 hours.
Yeah.
So we met up at 7 a.m. to start the hike, and by the end of our entire group getting there, the parking lot was full.
Wow.
So even 7 a.m., it gets crowded. Walking in, it wasn't too crowded. Once we got to the falls, there was a few people there. But walking out, we saw crowds of people coming in. So we knew that if we didn't get up that early, there wouldn't be, like, any space for us at the falls to even take our huge, like, group photo.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had 20 dogs and about, like, 18 people.
Wow. Okay. Do you ever have a limit on your group hikes like that?
Yeah, I would like, I'd like to cap it around 20-ish
okay.
dogs or people, only because if it gets too much more than that, it just causes a little bit more stress on everyone.
Sure. And I guess it's kind of hard to talk and mingle and get to know everyone,
right.
especially if you have new people that show up when you have that many people, that large of a group.
Yeah. So when I lead these hikes, I like to do like a little intro in the beginning, kind of introduce myself. So if it's too large of a group, I would need one of those bullhorns. and then just like the intimacy, I wouldn't be able to talk to a lot of people. So for me, if I led the hike, I would want a big enough but small enough group that I can still get a chance to talk to people and get to know them and at least know their dog's name. So just in case the next time they come out, then I can actually know who they are.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to kind of go ahead and get into, you know, speaking of hanging out with friends and with people that you do either regularly, pack hikes, anyone on Instagram or in real life that you want to give a shout out to, any good friends, any kind of inspiration?
Yeah, so we actually met a really good friend through Instagram. Her name is Nikki, and her dog is Zyla the Beagle.
Okay.
And her account is California.tails.
Okay.
And so she was following our account for a while, and she made it out to one of the Hiking Dogs with Insta hikes that I led, and that was the first time I met her. And ever since then, like, we've been planning hikes to go on just randomly here and there, chasing waterfalls throughout SoCal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Her dog and our dogs get along very well, and then we occasionally watch her dogs for daycare sometimes when she has a long day at work.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at her account now. Here's a picture of her at Laguna Beach.
Yeah.
Okay.
I showed her that beach.
Nice.
Yeah, there's also this Brandy. She's out in Arizona. Her account is PBJ_pack.
Okay.
And she has 4 little dogs that she goes out hiking all the time. And because of her little dogs and their adventures, like, I like fell in love with them. And she traveled a lot, and she came out to SoCal once and asked if we had time to meet. And we ended up meeting just because she came out.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, and then her little dogs and my little dog got together. There was another one of her friends that came out to the beach too to meet us.
I'm looking at some of her photos now. These are great.
yeah.
These are awesome. Yeah, these are like the least likely candidates that you would ever think of for adventures, but here they are.
That's basically what caught my eye.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, little dogs can adventure too.
Oh, absolutely. So, I've been saying this from the very beginning. You know, it's all adventures, great and small. All dogs, big and small, can adventure. So it's for everyone.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's also another, her name is Jillian, and her dogs are Mally and Apollo, and she's out in Oregon.
Yeah.
And her account is Black Dogs Adventuring.
Yep. I've talked to Jillian. So, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've had her on. Really cool. She's awesome.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew that Axel, the GSD, Tracy, she was on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I didn't know Jillian was on it, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jillian was actually the one that put together a hike when we went to go visit Oregon and Washington to visit some family.
Okay.
And I basically posted on Instagram, hey, we'll be in Oregon/Washington if anyone wanted to meet up. And Jillian, like, basically asked a few people that she knew if they were all down for a hike. And when we went to visit, we did a hike together, and like 19 of us were out there.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
so
really
that was
cool.
Actually my first taste of like a big, huge pack hike. And I loved it because it was friends basically, but we all met for the first time.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And I love that her dogs go hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a great conversation. We talked a little bit kind of about them being working dogs, and then I also did a second episode about their raw diet very early on.
Yeah,
and she has some great information about doing raw feeding for her dogs.
Yeah, that's cool. We're on raw diets too.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's also Twee, her dog is Hero, and then her account is I Am Superhero, or I Am a Superhero.
Oh, with an I. It's
oh,
I am,
yeah. Hero, H-I-R-O.
I Am Superhero.
Sorry.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Ah! Oh, pretty.
Yeah, she lives out in San Diego.
Okay.
And we actually got to talking over Instagram because our dogs and her dog are raw-fed.
Okay.
And she's really close friends with the owner of Real Dog Box, which is a treat and chew subscription box out in San Diego.
Okay.
We saw that I dehydrated my own treats and chews, and I would share like little videos here and there of how to do it. And she would ask me where to get like certain ingredients and stuff for that. And she asked me like what dehydrator I used to make all those at home. And then we just talked about raw and the benefits of just having hard chews for their teeth cleaning.
Yeah.
And we actually made it out to San Diego one time to meet up with actually another friend. But since it was San Diego, I thought maybe Twee would be free to come meet out. And then she came, and that's how we met.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, so we met her person, and she's actually another Hiking Dogs of Insta leader.
Okay.
So that have that in common, too.
Okay. Well, yeah, I will definitely include all of these in the show notes, so people can go and check these out. But of course, I can't let you go until I ask you probably the most important question of all. And that's, say that Rue and I are going to come out there to California and we are going to walk all of the dogs for you. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. I can't wait. We're going to take over and we're going to take 9 dogs out on walks for you so that, you know, you and Johnny can pack up with Goomba and Charlie and Stitch and Lilo and go anywhere and do anything. Where would that be?
My like ultimate dream is to pretty much road trip / overland up the West Coast through Canada and make it to Alaska.
Okay.
Yeah, because all the photos of Alaska, all the mountainscapes and all the glaciers and all of the national parks that they have, I just want to visit all of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how possible is that? Is there...
Super possible.
Really?
It's just money one, and then two, just like knowing where to go, and then obviously the border laws with animals.
Okay. Well, we're going to take care of the money for you. We're going to, you know, we're going to fuel up the vehicle. You have unlimited resources to get there, so we'll take care of it. But yeah, I mean, is it, can you basically drive off-road the entire way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of roads to take all the way through. We watch a few people on YouTube that actually do that.
Okay.
That they've done it before.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then where would you end at? Anywhere in Alaska or just all over Alaska? I guess once you get up there, you can pretty much go anywhere.
Yeah, after exploring some parts of Canada, because I know Canada is beautiful too.
Yeah.
But eventually ending in Alaska, hopefully the weather will be on our side.
We'll make sure of that.
Okay. Yeah, there's not anything specific that I want to see in Alaska, just basically everything.
Yeah.
Like all the snow, all the pine trees, all the wildlife, all of it. And then until I cover literally every single square footage of that state, I will come home.
That's awesome. All right. We'll take care of that. Then I guess the other question about that would be, would you rather have your own vehicle or would you rather use the Adventure Dog Podcast all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive vehicle? Because I can imagine that having your own vehicle for a trip like that, I mean, you know, if you could pick any vehicle, what would it be?
Honestly, anything that we build, it could be anything. We will build it specifically for whatever we need it for.
Okay.
And because we build it customized to what we want, like that, that's something we would prefer.
Yeah.
If money wasn't an issue, we would obviously like pay someone to do all of that.
Oh, sure.
But at the same time, I think Johnny just feels a little bit more pride in building it out himself.
It's just that once I build something, it helps me learn just in case if something happens on the trail, I can repair it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see
and
that.
And then knowing where everything is and what goes where.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing I've actually been looking at because I'm driving a Subaru Outback right now. At some point in time, that's one of the things I want to do is actually put a lift on that and do all-terrain tires. So I've been kind of looking around and trying to figure out, you know, what the best stuff is for it. But then also you're pondering whether or not I would actually be able to do the work on it myself to actually, you know, to do the lift. And I have no clue. It's not something I don't have a whole lot of experience with. I've worked on my cars in the past before and I've done some complicated stuff, but I've never done anything. I don't know if this is complicated or not.
To put a lift on a car, it's actually pretty simple. There's tons of YouTube videos on.
Just pull up a YouTube video and then just do what they do.
Really?
For the most part, yeah. I feel like I learn it too if I did it, but
yeah,
why? I don't need to.
Well, suspension always kind of, I don't know, there's something about it that scares me. I'm always worried I'm gonna do something wrong and then really regret it later on when I'm driving.
So many components that go into a suspension for it to work right.
Yeah,
for us, I think once you change the geometry of the car, you got to do other things to compensate.
Yes.
For example, if you do like a 2-inch lift, that should be okay. But once you go anything higher, you need to drop your differential. You need to add longer tie rods, or otherwise you'd be snapping axles left and right.
Yeah, see, that right there, what you just said just scared me into not wanting to do it myself ever.
You're thinking Johnny's talking like alien language. I have no idea what he's said.
I have enough understanding to know that it's not good. But no, I think, you know, for Subaru, for Outbacks, there's a few brands out there that make some pretty much over-the-counter aftermarket stuff that you can put on that's not severe. It's not like crazy monster truck kind of stuff, but it does a 1-inch or 2-inch lift, enough to put some all-terrain tires on, and I think I'd be comfortable with that. But at the same time, if it comes down to it and I'm in an emergency situation, I can change a tire. I can, you know, I can do that. But if it's anything more than that, that's when I might just be like, I'm going to call a professional. Not to get me out of this situation, but, you know, at least to, yeah, I don't know. That's a lot to contemplate.
Yeah, it is hard.
There is, yeah, like you said, there's information for it. There's YouTube. There's videos out there. So I have a little bit of faith that I'll do this at some point, but that's also, that's a long ways off, and that's a lot of money right now that I don't have. So yeah. But I can't wait to have like the Adventure Dog podcast wrap on the car. I think that would be great. So I have to give y'all kudos, and I can't wait to see that again on a new vehicle. That's so cool. So cool to see, you know, kind of everything you've done and that much passion kind of put into something as simple as a car wrap. It means a lot, you know. It's neat to see it.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I also want to say thank y'all. Thank y'all for coming on and talking to me about not just dogs, but overland driving. Something so cool. And taking dogs out on camping trips. That's amazing. Really, really super cool.
Yeah. Thanks for having
me. Oh, yeah. And, of course, I will be in touch with you because there's a lot of information here that, you know, I want to follow up on, and some more things that I would love to hear about. So I will be talking to you soon.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much, Nathan.
Yeah. And y'all have a good night.
You too.
Yeah. Bye-bye. If you haven't already checked it out and you're in the Orange County area in Southern California, you can find out more about their pack walks through their website, thecanineexplorers.com, as well as their Instagram. They are ambassadors for lots of different unique products, and if there's something you're looking for, especially with the holidays coming, they have discount codes on their website. They are also doing an upcoming pack walk and shelter drive to collect donations for one of their favorite rescues at Priceless Pet Rescue. Well, I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend and that you're recovering from the food coma. Rue's running mileage is slowly starting to creep back up again as we get ready for our hashtag epic winter trip, where we plan to do quite a bit of trail running and hiking, weather permitting. Of course, we're headed east this year, so our itinerary is taking definite shape, and we now have more destinations added, including stops near George Washington and Jefferson National Forest in Virginia, as well as Shenandoah National Park. From there, we'll be headed back down into North Carolina with a stop in Raleigh for New Year's Day. And then, well, I'm still open to suggestions. So if you have a really cool place you think should be a destination on our epic winter trip, let us know and Rue will drop a pin on the map. DM us on Instagram or email nathan@adventuredogpodcast.com. We would also greatly appreciate it if you took a moment to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcast. As always, thank you for listening. Now, go and have an adventure with your doggos.